Technorama episode 585, our last show of the year. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. Thank you very much. And if you are returning listener slash viewer, we appreciate you stopping by and giving us some more of your precious time. I am Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and right across the table from me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. I'm ready for Christmas. I've been good all year.
We'll see what Santa has to say about that. If you have actually,
I got a rock.
That's trick or treating.
Oh yeah. Well, still, yeah. No, I'm ready, man. Bring it.
All right, we have a voicemail. So let's do the feedback thing. Oops! Right on top of Craig's face. Let's move that.
Yeah. Letters. Oh, we get letters. We got letters. We get your letters. Every day.
Mailman.
Reach right out.
Those letters.
Thank you.
I love those letters.
I gotta love the Skype latency.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Mailman. Mail today.
Letters. How about this letter? Oh, that's way too much lag.
And right across the table from me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Yeah. Letters. We got letters.
We're going to do this like a movie where it just jumps all over the place. We have a voicemail. Yeah. We asked you to provide us with some clips, kind of like those little short quippy things you hear on the radio. Not clippy things. That would be somebody else completely. And we got this.
Yeah, I think it's time to get off the podcast.
It's time to get off the podcast. It sounds like, what, Pooper, get off the podcast? Hey,
yes,
you
right.
Crazy kids, get off my podcast. All right. Yeah.
We're just waiting for a word from up high that we're being canceled. From our higher ups.
No, we'll talk about that in our Patreon show. I'm not looking forward to that word.
Okay.
All right. And our question of the week to you was, it's almost 2020. Aside from flying cars, what futuristic thing did you seriously think we'd have by now? And I got a whole bunch of wonderful answers. We won't go through all of them because there are just so many of them.
But we will link to them so you can scroll through them for yourself.
We do have a link in there. We've got words like teleportation, interstellar travel, clean, free energy, jetpacks. They promised us jetpacks, Brian Parker says.
Yes.
Kristen Marcus said self-tying shoes. Well, we did get those. They're just really expensive. We did get the
true.
We did get the self-lacing shoes from Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
Living on Mars and or the moon, says Mike Wills. And Stuart Bryce, I just love the amalgam of conversations that happen between people in totally different sectors of my life that happen to this. Stuart Bryson says, Mike Wills, I agree. If you ever saw the series Space 1999, we had a moon base about 20 years ago. Well, yeah, and the moon was blown out of orbit, too. So I'm not sure I want to take that.
That's right.
That would seriously mess with the weather and everything else. So self-sufficient lunar colony or city, more robots, world government, end to hunger, contact with aliens, says Sean Brockman. Who maybe we have had contact with aliens and they just haven't told you about it yet.
Yeah, we just don't know for sure.
Rich says monorails connecting every major city. Well, we have the monorails that have two rails. Does that count? Brad Miller says 2020 vision. And Kevin, who used to work with Brad and me, said, I was thinking the same thing. 2020 vision. Oh, well, we'll have that next year. Everybody will have 2020 vision next year.
Now, I got a few on my where I posted the question as well.
What do you got?
Smell-o-vision.
And the smelloscope. No, the smelloscope doesn't come along until Farnsworth invents that one.
That's right. A couple thousand years. Cure for cancer. Personal HUDs. I guess the Google Explorer glasses were kind of like that, right? My old buddy, Don Tennyson, Vendaface.
Vendaface from the Muppets.
Oh, that's right. I was like, okay, Vendaface.
Where he walks up and kind of gets his face plucked off, the components, like a Mr. Potato Head, and then he gets another one put on.
Yeah. That's right. And I've told you before about how Comporium is our really only internet choice here in town. Patty Jarvis, my neighbor, says internet other than Comporium.
I'd say internet other than Cox, but okay.
Yeah. So fiber to internet to every home. Rosie the Robot, Skynet. Who? What?
I guess underwater cities. Remember C-Lab 2020? Yes, I do.
C-Lab.
Beaming technologies. Beam me up, Scotty.
Well, JT Shea said Baby Yoda, which we kind of got that this year.
We got the image of it. We don't have any toys or anything to go with that.
That's true. That's true. And of course, CJ Lamb posted a picture of a Cylon. Not sure what that means.
We should have Cylons. The Cylons should have taken over by now.
Yeah. Dwayne Sims has a picture of a lightsaber, which I think somebody said lightsaber on yours as well. And our buddy Clinton Alvord says beaming. Life would be so much less hectic.
The traffic
would be much better too if we had that.
You could get into the office across the country or across the globe in just minutes.
Hey, so if we had to rely on the internet for beaming, like to transfer you across the wire and put you somewhere, you'd be out of luck.
In my case, you could get here real fast, but it would take a really long time to get you home.
How long is it going to take to Chuck to get here? About 300 baud. Yeah. Don't pick up the receiver. He's transmitting.
And then we have to start all over.
I know.
All right. Well, that was fun. We'll do another one at the end of the show and post that to the internet sometime over the holidays so we can put it in our next show. Thank you, everybody, who contributed to that and sending your email. We want to hear more voicemail, little general quips that you've got.
Got to get that in there.
All right. On this day in history, I believe, is next, according to this program we outlined earlier.
Yes.
On this day in history, for December 18th, 2019, it was on this date. Hey, what happened to the day of the year?
I was just wondering where that went.
Hang on. I can pause that.
There's only a few days left in 2019.
Well, we could probably do the math, right? If this goes out on the 18th.
22 days.
Did I not copy and paste something right? I have to find the fault in this logic. Okay. It's in the Google Calendar invite. So if you subscribe to that calendar, you're okay, kids. It's just the part of the show that I missed. So let's continue. This is the 352nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 13 days left in 2019. It was on this date in 1777 that the United States celebrates its first Thanksgiving, marking the recent victory by the American rebels over the British general John Burgoyne, I think, at Saratoga in October.
On December 18th, 1833, the national anthem of the Russian Empire, God Save the Tsar, is first performed.
No, that's God Save the Queen. All right, it was 154 years ago today that the U.S. Secretary of State William Seward proclaims the adoption of the 13th Amendment prohibiting slavery throughout the USA. What was William Seward's other folly? That should have given it away right there.
Other folly?
Seward's folly? Purchasing Alaska.
I've been there.
Studied up on it too, apparently.
Actually, I was about to say something about Seward, Alaska, and then I was like, no, that'd be too on the nose. Anyway, that same date in 1892, the premiere performance of The Nutcracker by Peter Lick Tchaikovsky.
Huh? Wow, you're Litch. A music buff, aren't you?
Peter Litch? Lick.
Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky.
Ilyich. Oh, is that an I in there? Ilyich Tchaikovsky is in St. Petersburg, Russia.
December 18th, I shouldn't criticize because here comes another good name. December 18th, 1898, Gaston de Chasselot-Labat sets the first official recognized land speed record of, hold on to your seats, kids, 39.245 miles per hour, which is 63.159 kilometers per hour in Jeantot electric car.
Oof. That's pretty quick.
You can ride a bike faster than that.
Now, yeah, I have, actually. The resolution containing the language of the 18th Amendment to enact prohibition was passed by the United States Congress on this date in 1917.
Uh-oh. 18th
Amendment. Chuck takes a drink.
Yes. It was 61 years ago today that Project SCORE, the world's first communication satellite, is launched.
And also on December 18th, 1966, Saturn's moon, Epiphanes, is discovered by astronomer Richard Walker.
It was on this date in 1973 that Soyuz 13, crewed by the cosmonauts, oh, I get the Russians this time, Valentin Lebedev and Pyotr Klimuk, is launched from the Baikonur in Soviet Union.
Baikonur
Cosmodrome. That is where we launch our little rockets.
And it was 38 years ago today, the first flight of the Russian heavy strategic bomber, the Tu-160, the world's largest combat aircraft, largest supersonic aircraft, and largest variable sweep-wing aircraft was built.
Was it a large aircraft? I'm kind of getting that hint.
It's the smallest one. Smallest, largest one.
Also today, in 1999, NASA launches into orbit the Terra platform, carrying the five Earth observation instruments, including Aster, Ceres, Misser, MODIS, and MOPET. They sound like the inputs and outputs of a serial I.O. program, but anyway.
How about the inputs and outputs of the Muppet Show? A meteor exploded over the Bering Sea with a force of over 10 times greater than the atomic bomb that destroyed Hiroshima in 1975 on December 18th, 2018, at 23:55 GMT.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to German explorer Philipp von Hutten, born on the state in 1505.
And Christopher Polhem was the Swedish physicist and inventor, was born 358 years ago today.
English physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate J.J. Thomson was born on this date in 1856.
And Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria is born on the same date in 1863.
Another one, history buffs, why is that name really familiar?
Franz Ferdinand?
Archduke Franz Ferdinand. He was the guy who was shot that launched World War One.
Oh, that's right.
Coincidentally enough, he shares the same birthday just a few years later with Joseph Stalin. Georgian, Russian marshal and politician, fourth premier of the Soviet Union. He was born 141 years ago today.
And he also shares that birth date with American engineer who invented FM radio, Edward Howard Armstrong.
What year was he born?
In 1890.
Very nice. Betty Grable, the American actress, singer, and dancer, was born on that same date in 1916.
And Esther Lederberg, the American microbiologist, was born 97 years ago today.
Hail Esther. Russian colonel, engineer, and astronaut Boris Volynov is 85 today. Wow, that means he's still around.
He might be. Also born on that same date in 1939, American biologist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate Harold E. Varmus.
English singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer Keith Richard is 184 today.
That's in dog years. They had to multiply his age. And also born on the same date in 1946, American director, producer, and screenwriter, co-founded DreamWorks with Steven Spielberg. Not with. It's actually Steven.
Oh, the band left us. Oh, well. David A. Johnston, American volcanologist and geologist, was born on the same date in 1949.
And also born on that same date in 1963, American actor and producer Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt is 56 today. Wow. He doesn't seem older than me for whatever reason.
Yeah.
American singer, songwriter, producer, and actress Christina Aguilera was born on this date in 1980. And our listener birthdays this week include... for December 18th. You know what we're going to do next week, too, since we're not doing anything for next week would be a Christmas release, and we're not doing that.
Yeah.
December 18th through 31st includes December 20th, Phil Burchill, the 9-year-old I started listening to Technorama with, turned 21 this year in 2017. So they're now 23rd.
Whoa. Yeah.
We got to do some math 24. To figure this part out. 23.
Yeah. Is he 23?
2 years later. Yeah. 2017 was 2 years ago. The 9-year-old. So, Yes. I was thinking about that the other day. All our kids are grown up too. Remember Harrison used to be
kid? That's how we grow our audience. It takes us a long time, but we kind of have our listeners have kids and bring them up. And then they have kids and they bring them up. And eventually we have an audience to listen to the show.
I feel like I'm growing a Christmas tree farm here. It just takes, or whiskey or something. It just takes 40 years to recognize your investment.
You just can't splice them together.
21st is James Ballard, a.k.a. Carrick Sindrew, Bo Pace on the 22nd, along with Luke Chuck Stalker Smith. He is now 19, Craig.
Mm.
Wasn't he just like 9?
Yes.
Oh, dear goodness.
About 10 years ago.
Jason Poloni from Tampa, Florida is also on the 22nd. Richard Green, our good friend from Geek Out with Mainframe, is on the 23rd. Mad Boom on the 24th. And yes, we have a faithful listener on December 25th. Joel Parks. You thought I was going to say Jesus, didn't you?
Well, him too. But
I'm sure Jesus is listening to our podcast somewhere.
Yeah.
Also known as Agrajag Ama. C. Men is on the 29th. Also, the 31st has two birthdays. Shout out to Bird's mom and Mr. Sim, a.k.a. Jeremy from Winnipeg. Thank you, everyone, for putting your birthdays on the birthday list. It's 2020. Make yourself a New Year's resolution and put your name on that list over at chuckchat.com/wiki. We give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And you know what? Even if you don't, we wish you all the best as it's your birthday sometime during 2020, I'm sure. We'll send you the best of wishes, whether it's your birthday or not. How's that for a guarantee?
Yeah.
Let's get on with the news.
News and weather, everyone.
Would you like to take the first story, Craig?
Sure. Do you, I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong story. So, deep learning breakthrough made by Rice University scientists. So, in an earlier deep learning article, we talked, referring to, this is Ars Technica, and an article they referred to talking about how to inference workloads and use already trained neural networks to analyze data can be run by fairly cheap hardware by running the training loading workloads that the neural network learns on an order of magnitude more expensive. What? I feel like I just strung some words together. I didn't make sense. So in an earlier article, we talked about how inference workloads, the use of already trained neural networks to analyze data, can run fairly cheap hardware, but running the training workload that the neural network learns on is orders of magnitude more expensive. There you go. That sounds a little more, makes more sense to me now. In particular, the more potential inputs you have to an algorithm, the more out of control your scaling problem gets when analyzing its problem space. This is where MOC, it's an acronym, a research project authored by Rice University's Thurum Medini, and I'm getting some great names tonight, and Ashumali Shrestava, what that comes in. MOC is an acronym for Merged Average Classifiers via hashing. And according to its lead researcher, Shrestava.
S.
Yeah, Mr. S. Its training times are about 7 to 10 times faster, and memory footprints are about 2 to 4 times smaller than those previously large-scale deep learning techniques. In describing the scale of extreme classification problems, Medini refers to online shopping search queries, noting that there are easily more than 100 million products for sale online. This is, if anything, conservative. One data company claimed Amazon alone had 606 million separate products.
I believe it.
Yeah, pretty big. With the entire company offering more than 3 billion products worldwide, other company reckons that U.S. Product count is at 353 million. And Medini continues, a neural network that can that takes search input and predicts from 100 million outputs or products will typically end up with about 2,000 parameters per product. I guess I assume that's like colors and all that kind of variation too, right?
Size, shape,
weight. Shirt size. Well, you got 7 for a shirt probably. Anyway, you multiply those and the final layer of the neural network is about 2 billion parameters. And I am talking about very, very dead simple neural network model.
That's an oxymoron, a dead simple neural network model.
I know, right, yeah. At this scale, a supercomputer would likely need terabytes of working memory just to store the model. The memory problems get even worse when you bring GPUs into the picture. GPUs can process neural network workloads orders of magnitude faster than general purpose CPUs can, but each GPU has relatively small amounts of RAM. Even the most expensive NVIDIA Tesla GPUs have only 32 gigs of RAM.
Only 32.
Houdini says, training such a... Huh?
Only 32 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, only 32. Who needs... Nobody will need that much. Training such a model is prohibitive due to the massive inter-GPU communication. Instead of training the entire 100 million outcomes, product purchases in this example, Mach divides them into three buckets, each containing 33.3 million randomly selected outcomes. Now, Mach creates another world, and in that world, the 100 million outcomes are again randomly sorted into three buckets. Crucially, the random sorting is separate in World 1 and World 2. They have each of the same 100 million outcomes, but their random distribution into buckets is different for each world. With each world instantiated, a search is fed both World 1 classifier and a World 2 classifier with only three possible outcomes apiece. What is this person thinking about? Asks
Scary.
Shrivas, Mr. S. And the most probable class is something that is common between these two buckets.
There's a lot of data out there, and this deep learning breakthrough is making it easier to go through that data is the answer that I got.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I know I read a lot there, but it's interesting to think trying to sort through all that stuff. I've sorted through a good bit of data, but not that much.
No. That's not something you're going to get out with your typical SQL query.
Select all from World 1.
With 2,200 parameters.
Yeah.
All right.
I was sitting there thinking about that. I was like, well, what are the parameters? I'm thinking variations, and I want something white and round and whatever, you know. What are the parameters?
Yeah, it's not 2,000 parameters per product, but it's 2,000 parameters probably across all those products.
Really? That's what I thought it said. Yeah, 2,000 parameters per product.
Okay, I'd have a hard time coming up with 2,000 parameters if you're going to buy a shirt.
Well, I guess you could start with weight, you know, so you have weight.
Color.
One. Color.
Male or female.
Size.
Or does it matter?
Shape. Yeah.
Anyway.
2,000 parameters. Anyway,
let's go on to the next story.
That's just a list for the socks on Amazon.
And that's just our first story. From BBC.com, lawyers representing users of bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange Quadriga CX are asking Canadian authorities to exhume the body of its founder. They say they want to exhume given, quote, questionable circumstances surrounding his death. Gerald Cotton died suddenly last year in India from complications related to Crohn's disease. Following his death, the exchange was unable to locate or secure significant cryptocurrency reserves. When he died, the 30-year-old founder was the only person who had the passwords to the digital wallets containing $180 million Canadian, which is $137 million U.S. or £105 million in cryptocurrencies. His untimely death forced the closure of Quadriga CX, which had some 115,000 users at the time.
Mm.
Ouch. Mm. Online rumors have circulated, of course, that he was faking his own death and sought to abandon the funds, though no evidence of such a scheme has been revealed in the years since he died. So on Friday, the legal team representing users of the platform in the bankruptcy proceedings sent a letter to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police seeking an exhumation and post-mortem autopsy be performed on Cotton's body to, quote, confirm both its identity and the cause of death. They say information revealed during the proceedings further highlighted the need for certainty around the question of whether Mr. Cotton was in fact deceased or if he just made off with millions of dollars. We don't know. Ooh. Earlier this year, report auditor from Ernst & Young found significant problems in how the exchange was managed, including finding that Cotton created certain accounts on the Quadriga platform under aliases that may have been used to trade on the exchange. Wow, this is getting shadier by the minute.
Oh, yeah. That's what I thought when I read this. I was like, this is getting interesting.
Watch your cryptocurrencies, kids. They can, yeah. I know there's a whole lot of them out there.
Do you have cryptocurrency?
I do not. I do not have any cryptocurrency at this moment. Do you?
You know, I don't. Well, if I do, it's not much. It was like, I did something and they said, here, set up an account and you can have, and they gave me free. I forget what it was. It was nothing really. It's like $5, you know, but, I'll tell you when Bitcoin and all that stuff started coming out, I was having trouble wrapping my head around it at first.
So
I don't know about you.
Volatile though. I mean,
yeah,
it's too volatile for me. I mean, I'm not into that level of risk at this age.
Yeah, I know people that threw money all at it, and then, but I was like, it's a little too risky for me.
Yep. Alrighty, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with some more articles in just a sec. Hang on.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Bill Farmer. You may know me as the voice behind Goofy, Pluto, and many other characters.
Howdy there. This is your old pal, Mr. Haney, and you're listening to Technorama with the, who are they with? Chuck and Craig.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with Astronomy Cast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host, Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Or I'm in iTunes now.
Now there's old artwork and there's old artwork. Craig, would you like to share the next story? Another one from Ars Technica, I believe.
Old artwork. I got some old artwork. I drew some stuff back in the 70s.
Not even close to the age of this stuff.
Some days it does feel like it, but anyway. So a 43,900-year-old cave painting is the oldest story ever recorded. At this very moment, you're a participant in one of the things that makes us human, the telling and consumption of story. Whoa, it's like they're writing this article for me.
Telling a story?
Once upon a time.
Yeah.
Way back in the...
Yeah. Anyway, so it's impossible to say when our species began telling each other stories or when we first evolved the ability to use language to communicate, not only by simple practical concepts, but to share vivid accounts of events, real or imagined. But by 43,900 years ago, people of Indonesia island of Sulawesi had started painting some of their stories and images on cave walls. Newly discovered paintings in a remote cave depicts a hunting scene and its oldest story that has been recorded. And if Griffith University archaeologist Maxime Albert and his colleagues were right, it would also be the first record of spiritual belief and our first insight into what makers of cave art were thinking.
What were they thinking?
No, by the way, there's a picture of it down in the bottom of the article.
Donna's got a picture of it. Yep, up here.
Yep, there you go. Let's see. I lost my place. Anyway, across a 4.5-meter section of rock wall, 3 meters above the floor of a hard-to-reach upper chamber of the site called Liang. I started to say Liang Yu. That's where. Oliver. Was there
someone's been watching too much Arrow?
Yes, right. Liang Bulusplung, Bulu Siplong, Four. It's like a planet. The Ambulu Seamung Four. Wild pigs and a dwarf buffalo called Anoa face off against a group of strangely tiny hunters in a monochrome dark red. A dark red hand stenciled adorns the left end of the mural, almost like ancient artist signature. Though an opening in the northeast wall of the cave, sunlight spills in to illuminate the scene. So Liang Bulus being four is a living cave being still being reshaped by flowing water and layers of rock have begun to grow over the painting spots. The minerals that form those layers include small traces of uranium. You be careful in there, kids. Watch out, which over time decays into thorium 230. Unlike uranium, thorium isn't water soluble and can only get into the rock via decay. By measuring the ratio of uranium 234 to thorium 230 in the rock, archaeologists can tell how recently the rock layer was formed. Okay. So deposits have been slowly growing over the hunting mural for about 49,300 years, which means the painting itself may be even older than that. That makes the cave mural the oldest on record of an actual story. At first glance, it seems to suggest a game drive in which people flush out animals from cover and drive them towards the line of hunters with spears or other weapons. If Albert and his colleagues were right about that, it means that somebody 44,000 years ago also created the firsthand record of how they made a living. So you can go back, go through and read the rest of this information, but yeah, you can see the pictures.
Wonderful pictures and diagrams of where it is in the cave and whatnot. So,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Good stuff.
Imagine somebody standing there painting that a long time ago.
Well, there's a show on Netflix. It's part of the PBS series. I think it's part of PBS. Civilizations. It's a series, and a lot of it is based around artwork and architecture, and it's very, very artistic driven. And they do talk about some of this stuff, but they didn't talk about this one specifically. So this is very timely because I've been watching that series over the last couple of weeks.
So, Civilization?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna go check that out. I think I saw it scrolling by one day.
It's not something you sit down and binge all the shows, or it would get a little, I don't know. At least in my
mind. It's not a Breaking Bad level of intense.
There's no cliffhangers on the end of this one. What did the Chinese do in the 44th century BC?
We'll find out next time. Da-da-dum.
All right, quick shout out to the chat room. We do this show Sundays on 9:30 when we have bandwidth. We're still struggling with our internet and internet equipment issues on this end to broadcast to you. But when we do get on there, you might want to follow our Facebook page. Check. It's at facebook.com/technoramapodcast. Go join that. Get your notifications when we get on there. It'll be typically Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time, or you can watch later. We do post this to YouTube. And of course, there's the audio podcast. So nobody to give a shout out to this week. So we're going to jump right to our patrons and give them the love they so deserve, because it's thanks to them that this show continues. They are the financial backbone of this podcast, providing for hosting and software upgrades and all the other expenses that we would normally incur out of our poor little pockets.
And our deep salaries, let me tell you.
Yeah. No, we don't even get our 3% this year. I'm sorry. No Christmas bonus this year, Craig.
Wonderful.
Again. We do this for the love, and we appreciate the love you show in return. Not only do you dedicate your time listening and viewing the podcast, but also financially. Thank you, Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills. I'm not sure where my eyeballs are going on this table anymore. Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros. We're just going to mash up the words and give you a cross-section of who's on here. John Clifford, Leon. Thank you, John Noble.
Is that the elf John Noble?
Not the elf John Noble.
Oh, okay.
No, the fringe John Noble. Chris MC, Alexis Duran. Saturday Morning Media, thank you, Steve Therian. Thank you, Jorgis Rowan and John Miller Jr. and Amber Elstad and Harold McKinstry. Thank you, Amy Bowen. Thank you, Denise Inglis, Stephen Wetchy, Dean Jensen, Dandy Man, and Calf One, Matt Baum, and our latest, newest patron, Christina. Thank you very much to all of you. Again, they not only get their names on the show with huge thanks and accolades, but they also get special content, because right after we record this, we record a Patreon show for them with a special feed that you can only get if you are a Technorama patron through patreon.com. And if you want to do that, you can go over to patreon.com/Technorama podcast. And for as little as a dollar a show, keep this show running. We appreciate it. Truly, truly, we do.
Hey, if you know Chuck and I, you know it's special, all right.
Special in that way. Yes. We'll just go
in that way. That's right.
It's a special kind of Technorama special. Let's do our Geek Library next. A couple of stories here. All right, a tiny, simple nuclear reactor could change everything in energy. Woohoo! An energy startup in Oregon wants us to rethink our reluctance to embrace nuclear energy. Wired reports, NuScale Power studies new reactor technology from a lab in Oregon State University campus, the same university where the 2019 climate crisis petition began. Their cutting-edge reactor is tiny, and it... Proponents insist. It's proponents.
I need an apostrophe.
Yeah,
in there, right?
I think that was what would throw me off. It's proponents. No, that would be a possessive it's or contraction of it is.
It's
anyway,
proponents. It flies through the air.
Its components fly through the air.
Propellants.
The proponents insist it's much safer than our existing notions of nuclear energy have led us to believe. The oldest operating U.S. nuclear power reactor opened in 1969. Really? I thought we were a little older than that, but okay. And even the newest powered on until the mid-1990s. One completed in 2016, started construction back in 1973. Talk about your long construction projects. Only two new reactors are under construction in the U.S., but they're billions of dollars over budget and years behind schedule. You think? Like our aging and increasingly dangerous infrastructure, these nuclear plants need to be comprehensively updated or replaced, and soon, soon, I tell you. Even so, nuclear power accounts for 2/3 of the United States' total renewable power output, meaning any reactor that reaches end of life can significantly reduce our amount of renewable energy. NuScale's next generation nuclear reactor is tiny by comparison to today's operating reactors in the U.S. It's safe to install in clusters according to the power needs of a specific area. And because of its tiny size, these reactors are much easier to encase in safety devices and contain in the event of an emergency. What kind of an emergency would that be, Dad? Wow.
Well, son.
Homer Simpson would have a much smaller office. These are regulatory differences. There are regulatory differences, too. A demonstrably safer nuclear plant would need to be built 10 miles or more outside of its service area. In fact, the existing regulatory process and paradigm is based on huge reactors that are all going to age out of the system soon. Once new technologies begin to receive approval, regulators can begin to convert or even sundown existing plants and reduce the overall risk. In the NuScale reactor, a core is kept cool by circulating normal fresh water, as it happens in today's operating nuclear plants on much, much larger scale. Inside huge nuclear towers, most of the space is dedicated to cooling. The NuScale reactor uses gravity and buoyancy to naturally circulate the cooling water. The size difference is staggering. Quote, about the size of two school buses stacked end to end, you could fit around 100 of them in the containment chamber of a large conventional reactor, Wired reports. The reactor technology itself isn't completely different than before. It's just wildly more efficient and up to date. Woohoo! So, look forward to that. If this gets up and running, you could have just a cluster of, 50 of these if you had a smaller town, or you could have a cluster of 5,000 of these for a larger metropolis.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you want to take one out of service, you just take one of the cylinders and replace it. You know,
that would seem to make sense, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. I remember reading an article. It's been several years now, but it was talking about using like a small, even smaller than that, a nuclear power plant, like for my neighborhood or for my area, I guess, small area. And it was safer. It'd be in the ground. There's, but it's much smaller and a self-contained, device. So it would be much safer and wouldn't be a problem than even the bigger nuclear power plants.
I didn't see anything in here about the dealing with the nuclear waste, though.
Well, that's how we do today. You bury it.
Yeah, I don't think it would be any difference. You still have to clean this thing out once in a while and swap out the rods.
Just shoot it out to the moon or the sun.
Because the sun is already a nuclear reactor. Yes.
I'm sure it's decommissioned now, but the first nuclear power plant, it was in Shippingport. I'm trying to look where it was at, but Shippingport Atomic Power Station. It was started up in May 26, 1958.
Okay. That makes a little more sense. So what did they say? The oldest one was that's still running is 1969?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I know people that have worked on power plants and they're pretty comfortable with them. I mean, we've had issues here and there and of course in Japan, but that was like
because a tsunami took it out.
Yeah. That's a perfect storm kind of situation. You had a tsunami come in and but they're, you know, they didn't seem worried about the safety of these nuclear power. I like the idea of the smaller ones because it makes sense that you can swap things out or
almost like a server farm
or remove
one big mainframe.
Yeah.
All right. Would you like to take us into our last story?
Yes. Let me get back up. Let me go open it up. I thought I already had it open up. So there is buried treasure in there, thar hills. There's buried treasure on Mars, and here's NASA's treasure map. Excuse me. NASA has big plans for returning astronauts to the moon in 2024, a stepping stone on the path to sending humans to Mars. But where should first people land on the red planet? The new paper published by Geophysical Research Letters, that's only all caps, so it's a real thing, will help by providing a map of water ice believed to be as little as an inch or 2.5 centimeters below the surface.
Okay.
Water ice will be the key consideration to any potential landing site. With little room to spare aboard the spacecraft, any human missions to Mars will have to harvest what's already available for drinking water and making rocket fuel. NASA calls this concept its in situ resource utilization. I guess in situation resource, I guess, is what they're trying to say. It is an important factor for selecting human landing sites on Mars. Satellites orbiting Mars are essential in helping scientists determine the best places for building the first Martian research station. The authors of the new paper make use of data from two of the spacecrafts, NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and Mars Odyssey Orbiter, to locate water ice that could potentially be within reach of astronauts in the red planet. So you won't need a backhoe to dig up this ice. A shovel. Yeah, this was their official findings. You won't need a backhoe, said the paper's lead author of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. We are continuing to collect data on buried ice on Mars, zeroing in on the best places for astronauts to land. Now, I got a question for you. Mm-hmm. You know, they keep talking about they want to find evidence of water on Mars, which I know we kind of found it, but is it drinkable water?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, there's two kinds of ice on Mars. There's the carbon dioxide or dry ice, and then there's the H2O kind that we can drink. So,
okay.
There is H2O water ice.
Well, they keep wanting to look for life, and they keep saying that we need to find evidence of water ice.
Yes.
Well, I guess they'd have it.
My question is, how much is it costing to send a handful of scientists to Mars?
I don't know. Once you get them,
millions,
I don't know.
Billions? Let's just throw out a number. Let's say it's $100 billion. What could we do with $100 billion on planet Earth to clean up the problems we have? I mean, if everybody says, oh, we should go to Mars because if there's some sort of, you know, catastrophic event, oh, like another dinosaur extinction thing, it's going to wipe mm-hmm. out the population and we need to be able to disperse ourselves. I think we're going to wipe ourselves out first if we don't clean up the planet we've got. And that money could be spent on short-term things like, oh, global warming or cleaning up the oceans, mm-hmm. sustainable food practices, because we're going to kill ourselves anyway first.
Well, you know, the geek in me is, I want to see people go to Mars, but same time.
I do too. I just don't think this is the right time. I'm kind of have problems.
Yeah, I'm with you. No, that's what I'm getting at. I want to see it happen, but at the same time, I'm with you that I think there's a lot of problems we need to solve here on Earth first.
Not an easy answer, but that's my personal feeling. I was first in line to this when I was watching a show with Dr. Robert Ballard, and he said people are spending a whole bunch of money to send a few people to another planet. That's not really saving the civilization. I'm sorry. Putting six people on a planet that can't sustain life right now. Maybe someday it will in the future. But
you want to go somewhere else and see if we can muck up that planet too?
We need to sustain life here first. And there are things mm-hmm. we can do, better things to do with that money. I know my spacefaring friends will not appreciate that much, but we got to take care of the planet we live on first before we...
You have to kind of be practical about it. I would love in my lifetime to hear about what we find on Mars firsthand, you know, somebody landing, and it'd be great. But yeah, you're right. I mean,
it's a lot of money. Well,
climate change is kind of the top of my list right now.
Uh huh. Yeah. There is also a show that I was watching. What was it called, Donna? Bill Nye. It was a show on Bill Nye on Netflix. It was a Kickstarter program that was run a few years ago, and it's finally come to mm-hmm. fruition and aired. And I'm just going to say it's an interesting documentary or slice of his life.
Oh, okay.
So check it out, whether you believe one way or the other, or he gets into some pretty political stuff. So I found it fascinating. All right.
Okay. Very cool.
Takes us to the end of the show. I know we got to give a little insight of what we're watching on Netflix too. Yeah, we're at the end. The question this week is, and it'll probably be for the next couple of weeks because we won't be doing a show over the Christmas break. We'll return back in 2020. Wow. We've been podcasting a long time. Question of the week is,
let's just do it a little bit more.
What can't you believe still exists in 2019? This is sort of turning last week's question on its head of what did you think we'd have by 2020? It's like, what is this still doing around in 2019? What is it about that? I have
cassette
one of
tapes.
They're making a comeback. Well, I'm not sure why.
Why do we still have those?
Oh, my favorite is business cards. Why do we still have those? Well,
absolutely.
And we've made a number of technological attempts to get rid of them, you know, with bump and tap and who knows what. I remember my palm used to have infrared, send your business card to me. And that worked pretty cool as long as somebody had a palm. But if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Actually, I thought bump worked pretty good, but it just never went anywhere.
Minor success. It was
what was really cool about bump, you mentioned bump, is right before their last hurrah, they added a function where if I was on my phone and I had a file, you could go to like, you're going to do bump with somebody. But what you do is you tap your space key on your keyboard mm-hmm. and it would send the file to your computer.
Why don't we just have like name badges with instead of giving someone a card, have them scan your QR code. That would give them the contact information they need, or bring you to a website where you could download the V card or whatever. If you really want to have something online, do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because most mobile devices have a QR code reader anyway?
Yeah. I mean, you can just pull up, my Samsung, I just pull up the camera. You don't have to do anything.
We have at work, I don't know, you've probably heard of Now Creators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like a universal profile for your ServiceNow stuff, but it also has a link to LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever.
Right.
I printed out a bunch of QR codes that go to my Now Creator profile and put those on my business card. So if anybody gets that, they're going to get, a usual phone number, email address, but they'll also get that, which says, hey, this is what Chuck knows about ServiceNow. So I thought that would be kind of a cool way to do it, too. I could also have some that go up to my personal website, which I've done in the past. We're getting off track here. But the thing that made me think of the QR code was watching a series on Amazon called The Feed. This is kind of a Black Mirror kind of series where it's in the near future.
Okay.
Very interesting from a tech social media standpoint, if you're interested in something like that. But again, we are running the clock here. So we're going to leave you with that thought for 2019 as one of our final thoughts. And thank you once again for joining us. If you appreciate this, we appreciate your support. You can find us over on, contact us. The listener line, 707-530-2428. Maybe drop in a little quip. Hey, kids, get off my podcast. thank you to whomever sent that last one, and we appreciate that. And leave us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Visit our page, Facebook page, whatever it is. We've got it all listed over at chuckchat.com. Click the Technorama icon, and away you go into the land of adventure. And have fun with that. So, till next time, Craig, I think it's up to you. Give us the traditional sign-off for one last time for 2019.
One last time. 101, everybody. We'll see you next year.
Thanks.